going to turn it over to Region 4's Brian Haltzclaw, who will kick everything off and introduce you to the rest of the speakers. Brian.
Good morning, everyone. We'd like to welcome each and every one of you. We are very excited here in EPA Region 4 in Atlanta to be given this. We are extremely excited. We've got over 150 registered. You represent over 25 states, I see here, as well as Canada, the majority being from our eight southern states, which our aim is to target. But we're very happy to see those other states' communities on as well. I also want to say thanks to those who helped market our e-flyer to raise the awareness of this great grant program. Without many of you out there, you wouldn't have gotten the word, and we appreciate you passing on this flyer because we think here in Region 4, without this awareness, there can never be true equity. We still have geographic corridors who've never benefited from a Brownfields grant, and we're trying to do better and better each year to get this word out about this wonderful grant program. I'm going to get started. The slide basically goes down the agenda for today, estimated time frame. And we'd really like to encourage even those that are doing cleanup and RLF grants to stay on board the entire time, because we will be sharing tips on the assessment grant that would be pertinent to you as well. As far as our EPA speaker, slide three, they're going to get on. We've split the slide presentation so you don't get tired of any one voice. They bring a lot of years' experience at EPA, many years' experience evaluating grants, and some of us, in fact, we've written grants in our former work lives. Slide five, EPA's mission is to protect human health and environment, and we do believe that revitalization of contaminated properties goes hand in hand with that very same mission. As far as benefits of revitalization goes, there's a plethora of research, studies, and also communities that are even on this phone that have exhibited the true benefits of revitalization. There are extremely many, and I won't get into them too long, but they do facilitate local tax base increases, does prevent sprawl, cleaner air indirectly, 1 acre of brownfields redevelop. There's research showing that we do save about 4 acres of green space. And it's critical that we all realize that this is just more than a grant program. This is a program where we can truly enhance the well-being of a community. As far as the Brownfields definition, this is the one we go by in the U.S. EPA. Real property to expansion, redevelopment, or reuse, which may be contaminated by the presence or potential presence of a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant. Slide 8 shows the kind of contamination these grants are eligible to address, from hazardous substances, petroleum contamination, controlled substances. We haven't got many applications to deal with meth labs, but that is a eligible category, mine scar lands, and others. It is also not uncommon for many suspected brownfield sites, as exhibited by our prior grantees, to be assessed, and they find as little as perhaps 1 out of 3 not contaminated. So this program will address sites which the kind of contamination or the level is basically unknown. As far as EPA's overall national investment in brownfields grants, since 95, when we started our pilot program and the law was not in place yet, we have awarded over 1,600 grants, $500 million, and these are the kind of tracking measures we like to show Congress to justify our program and take it forward. You see there over 10,000 parcels, almost $10 billion in leveraging cleanup and redevelopment dollars, and should you get a grant, we do like to definitely track these kinds of measures. And last but not least, over $43,000 jobs, pardon me. I'm going to hand it off to Camilla on our team, and she's going to take it from here.
Thank you, Brian. Many of you know this is a competitive grant program. Last year, I think the statistics were 1 in 4 applications were awarded a grant. So you have to put a lot of time and effort into your application. Here's all the folks that are eligible to apply for these grants. There's quite a few that are eligible, and we've worked with all these different groups at EPA. If you have questions about your eligibility, we hope you will call your EPA office because we can help you determine your eligibility. We will talk specifically about eligibility in just a few minutes when we discuss threshold criteria. Here's some stats on last year's program, how many proposals we received, how many we funded, and there's a breakdown of the different types of grants we did fund. As you can see in Region 4, we funded 43 grants, which is about 13% of the national total of grant money. The next breakdown is how that went into our Region 4 states. You can get information about other states by checking your region EPA website or calling your regional office. Here's our schedule for the grant application process. The notice of availability for the grant has already been advertised in the Federal Register. The date that your application is due and should be postmarked is October 12th. We plan to make award announcements in early March. Here's some information about the current evaluation process. The region office will evaluate your application for threshold criteria. We will help determine correct eligibility and other threshold matters. There is a national panel that will evaluate the ranking criteria for the grant. That simply means that if you're from Region 4, your application will be evaluated for its ranking criteria by other regions. Those with the highest scores in the application process will be forwarded on to headquarters. They will make the actual decision on who gets the award. We can just click now. We've gone through that. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about what different types of grants we have and give you just a little intro to each one. We're on slide 17. Okay, first we have the assessment grant program. Here's just a few points about the assessment grant. Essentially, what do you use this particular grant for? You can use it for a variety of things in assessment. You can inventory, characterize, assess, as well as conduct planning for your brownfield site, as well as your community involvement. As you can see, these grants are community-wide or site-specific. And here's the amounts that you are eligible to apply for. $200,000 for hazardous substances, community-wide. You don't have a limitation on how many assessments you can do with the $200,000. You can do as many as you need to. Or if you only have a few sites, you could use that money for assessment as well as the other activities such as cleanup planning and community involvement. Similarly, applicants are eligible for an additional $200,000 for petroleum-only contamination. And in some cases, you may be able to get a $350,000 waiver. The total maximum for any site that you can request is $350,000, though. We ask that you submit no more than two applications per eligible entity. On assessment, that number is different from cleanup, so you want to make a note of that. You must apply separately for hazardous and petroleum at this time. Next slide, which is, next slide's 18. As you can see, there's success with these assessment grants, and more details on success stories, such as this one in Jackson, Mississippi, can be found on the EPA Brownfields website. We just want to show you that other than paperwork and grant applications, we do work on site. On slide 19, there's just a few points here about the revolving loan fund grant program. And like I said, we'll get into the details of each type of grant in just a few minutes. These grants enables the applicant to make low-interest loans to carry out fundamentally cleanup at Brownfields properties. They are usually applied for once folks have completed the work under their assessment grant or have done their own local assessment program. You may apply for up to $1 million per eligible entity. Of the total, 40% may be used for subgrants, 60% may be used for loans. Coalitions may apply, so more than one applicant can apply for more than $1 million. Just each applicant can only apply for up to $1 million. There is a cost share of 20%. Let's go on to the next slide, which is slide 20. I'm just waiting for the... And as you can see, with a successful revolving loan program, you can go from an empty parking lot to a nice hotel. Or is that a housing arrangement? Golf course?
Golf course to apartments.
From a golf course to apartments here. Thank you. Next slide, which is 21. I'll say just a few things about the cleanup grant program. Cleanup, of course, is for cleanup. You may apply for up to $200,000 per property. Skipping over, please note that here you can apply for up to three properties, whereas under assessment, you can apply for up to two different assessment grants. Nonprofits may also apply in addition to the other eligible entities. There is a cost share percent of 20%. You must demonstrate fee simple title to demonstrate that you own the property that you've applied for on cleanup by June 30, 2008. You must provide proof as an applicant that you own the property after you've notified of your grant award, but it must be by June 30, 08. And as we've learned in the past, this is a hard deadline. Let's go to the next slide, which will be 22. And right here in Atlanta, we were able to use a cleanup grant to create a soccer field. And I know the neighborhood was very pleased to get that cleanup done. Now, we do have other US EPA Brownfield Sponsors programs. Jobs Training Grant Program is available. Kathleen Curry here in Region 4 is our contact on that. And we also have a targeted Brownfields Assessment Program for communities that need specific help with a particular site. Olga Perry is our contact on that. Let's go to the next slide, which is, let's go on to 25. Okay, getting started with the grant. If you haven't found these already, the guidelines are on this particular website. Please do not substitute this training or any other training for closely reading and following the detailed guidelines, because they're very helpful and they tell you exactly what you need to have in your grant proposal. As I said before, your grant deadline for postmark and for submitting via electronically is October 12th. See on the last line here, if you're doing the grants.gov registration, you want to submit that a few days ahead of time. Moving on to the next slide, we'll talk a little bit about basic proposal preparation practices. I can't emphasize enough that you have to read the guidelines and reread them sometimes, as well as follow those directions. You might also want to contact any successful grantees that you know of. There's plenty of success stories, and all the previous grantees are listed on the EPA website nationally. Those telephone numbers and contact information are available. Most of these folks that I've run across are very interested in helping others get Brownfields grants. One tip that we like to share with everybody is that you really must share everything you know about your community in this proposal. Many of the reviewers are not from your part of the country or even from your state, so you really do have to create a setting for your project and to explain your purpose and what your ultimate goal is as far as receiving this grant and what you plan to do with it. So in a nutshell, this needs to be a standalone document. Please address all the criteria, because each criteria is scored. If the particular criteria doesn't apply to your community, you need to state that in your application and explain why. We like to ask you to be kind to the reviewers, and that's all the EPA reviewers. If you could minimize the use of acronyms and technical jargon or local jargon, that would be helpful to us. Because, again, these reviewers are from all over the country, and not all of them are from EPA. Some are from other federal agencies. Going on to the next slide, which is slide 27, these are just good practices for preparing proposals. We do want you to all follow the page limit and notice this. It's 18 pages, single-sided. Please leave some margin in the page because these pages are Xerox. And you have to leave plenty of margin so the Xerox comes through. The Xeroxing is in black and white, so it doesn't help anybody for you to put any color documents or photographs or charts in your proposals. Everything really should be black and white. You do want to limit the number of attachments. Reviewers do look at the attachments, but many times if the attachment section is larger than the grant application, it tends to burden the reviewer rather than assist the reviewer. Any pages that are in excess of 18 will be removed, and they will not be forwarded to the review committee. Now, I'm just talking about the application here. I'm not talking about the attachments. There is no numerical limit on the attachment, but anything past page 18 will be eliminated from the application. And here's some information on the margins. Let's go back to that slide so we can send it. See, keep a 1-inch margin on here. Here's some details on type. No binders because these have to be removed for Xeroxing. I do want to emphasize that, again, please no color because it won't come through on the Xerox. And sometimes the color diagram on Xerox really comes out just gray or black, and you can't really tell what it is. Let's go to the next slide, 28. Like I said, no photos. Maps are good as long as they're in black and white. If you're applying for more than one grant program, you must submit separate proposals, particularly if you're applying for petroleum and hazardous substance community assessment grants. You must submit separate proposals. If you're applying for more than one cleanup grant in your community for three separate properties, you must submit three separate proposals. We cannot separate those proposals once they've been submitted to the national evaluation program because all these applications are sorted by region and distributed to each region. So we only have the ability to make copies of the proposals. We can't do any sorting or pre-reading of the proposals. So please submit separate proposals for each project that you're applying for. Now, that's about just good basic proposal preparation. We're going to talk about threshold criteria now, and Kathleen Curry is going to do that.
Good morning, and thank you for attending. The thresholds, remember, are pass or fail. You have an 18-page total limitation, and most of our grants are community-wide. So remember the weight of each of your ranking, and you will need the pages for that. So I have an ABC formula for your thresholds. Be accurate, be brief, and be current. Threshold criteria for the assessment grant, we're on page 31. slide 31, threshold criteria to assessment grant. You need to make sure you discuss your applicant eligibility. Make sure that your letter is current from the state or the tribal authority. And if you have specific, site-specific, make sure the site eligibility, property ownership eligibility is discussed. In the revolving loan, again, applicant eligibility, show where you're applicable, the description of your jurisdiction, whether it's municipal, state, local, a letter from the state tribal, again, environmental authorities is required, again, current. Make sure you include your cleanup authority and oversight structure. Cost share, make sure that's in there, your 20%, and your legal authority to manage a revolving loan fund. For the cleanup grant, again, your eligibility must be shown. Your letter from your state or tribal authority should be included. Site eligibility and property ownership eligibility requirements are to be met there. Your cleanup authority, oversight structure, and again, your cost share is discussed. Again, as they say here in bold, threshold criteria, you must pass it to go into the ranking. Slide 33. Threshold applicant eligibility includes, and they're listed for you on page 14 to 15 of the guidelines. Slide 34. Make sure that your letter from the state or tribal authority is current and it discusses the issue at hand, which is your application for assessment revolving loan or cleanup grant. No other letter from the state discussing anything else will be acceptable. It must state the environment acknowledging the applicant's plans to conduct the assessment or cleanup. And lastly, the letter from the state, the useful tips. As I said, your ABC, C being current, and again, only a letter discussing your current application. Uncle Perry will take over on slide 36 to discuss site property and ownership eligibility. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. And again, thank you for participating. Under threshold, site and property ownership eligibility, slide 36, it says, the polluters pay. The Brownsville law prohibits EPA from providing grant funds to entities that are considered potentially liable under CERCLA section 107. Liability is highly dependent on how and when the site was acquired. Also remember, the site and property ownership eligibility requirements apply across all Brownsville programs. That's whether you're applying for an assessment, a cleanup, or a revolving loan fund. Site and next slide, which is 37, the most common acquisition scenarios that we've found have been through foreclosure process, purchase, donations, and some have even been taken through eminent domain. The next slide, 38, site and property ownership, again, sites that are not eligible. They include properties on or properties that have been proposed for the NPL or National Priorities List. Also, properties that are subject to a unilateral order, any kind of court order, administrative order on consent, or judicial consent decree. These properties, again, are not eligible for Brownsville funds. The next slide, number 38, sites requiring a property-specific determination These are properties that are subject to ongoing or planned CERCLA removal action. Property/facilities is issued, or properties that have been issued a permit by the federal or authorized state government under the Solid Waste Act. That was slide 39, and on slide 40, site and property ownership eligibility. Again, with the property-specific determination, remember, properties, facilities subject to RCRA corrective action or subject to RCRA closure notification or is subject to closure requirements specified in a closure permit. These are not eligible, or these are sites that need a property-specific determination. On to slide. On to slide 41. That's okay. Useful tip. Remember, at a minimum, a phase one must be done. A phase two should either be on the way or completed. At least we encourage you to complete the phase two if you possibly can, or at least have a completed phase two, but we at least need to have that phase one done and the phase two on the way. Describe your cleanup plan and have a good estimated cost, one that we can believe. Next slide, 42. Applicants with property-specific determinations must provide the LUS contact for your state. You can find that information, I believe it's online, either through EPA's website or you can find it on the CLUIN website. Next slide is 43. Tell how you will oversee the cleanup. Do you intend to join the state VCP program or voluntary cleanup program? That's the information we need to know specifically for a cleanup site. We need to know that you're going to be technically, or at least that the site is going to be technically overseen by someone who has the capability to do so. Whether you plan to, if you are a tribal entity, let us know that. Let us know that you're going to join their program, or just how you plan to be technically proficient to oversee this cleanup. Cleanup authority and oversight structure. Again, we encourage you to join the VCP program. Also, if you are a revolving loan entity, please provide your legal opinion, the authority that gives you access to secure this particular site. We need to know that information to be sure to answer ability to gain access to adjacent properties. We need to know that you have already been thinking ahead of time, how, if I have to gain access to this property, I have talked to the owner, I have talked to whoever is responsible for this particular piece of property, and I know exactly how I'm going to gain access. That lends credibility to your proposal. Under cost share, which is slide number 45, cost share for cleanup and RLF proposal is 20%. That 20% can be tracked in the form of money, labor, material, or services. If you're planning on using any of those entities, please make sure it's something that is trackable. It cannot be something that you have used in the past, like even free award. You can't use that because it's not trackable. Make sure that it is a trackable contribution if you plan on using it. Applicants may petition for a hardship waiver. Please know that that is out there. If you are just, you know, if you're you as a city, state, or a governmental entity, if you just cannot pay that 20%, you cannot even see how you can track that 20%, you can apply for that hardship waiver. And I'll go on to slide number 46. Again, it says that RLF and cleanup grants are to have the 20% cost share, and you're supposed to identify that source. And under here, it says that you may, it gives you an example, I should say, of what kind of information you can provide if you are applying for that cost share waiver. But remember, even though it's out there, you have really got to justify it. You have got to, I mean, you've got to just make our hearts bleed for you, because this is a rare entity that they provide these. So make sure that you have done everything that you can do to show us that you really, 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 really need this waiver. On to slide number 47. Legal authority to manage a RLF. Remember to provide your legal opinion from your legal counsel. Please demonstrate your legal authority in terms of your actions or ability to manage a revolving loan fund. Also remember, legal authority must include the ability to hold funds, to make funds, and to collect repayments. Remember to show us that in your threshold. Useful tips. Assessment and cleanup people, most of the RLF information does not apply to you. It applies specifically for the RLF. Legal counsel must, your legal opinion must be attached. Please don't include it in the threshold, because if you do, you're simply taking away top space for other information that should go in your proposal. Because as Camilla read earlier, your space is limited. Your pages are limited. So you want to put that in an attachment. And now I'm going to pass the torch on to Nicole.
Hi, this is Brian. Before we pass it on to Nicole, I want to say we're making this big transition from the threshold pass-fail section. And I really want to thank Kathleen Ahuga for putting that on. We've got over 150 people on the line, and we're very sure there are very brand new people to the Brownfield funding program. Threshold can be complicated. There's a lot of information in there. We just ask you to not be intimidated by it all, especially if you're new, and going after a community-wide proposal. Those assessment proposals, again, usually you only take up maybe a half a page telling us and about your threshold criteria. So a lot of the information, the majority of this section, really pertain to site-specific as well as cleanup and RLF proposals. I just want to make that clarity. Don't get overly intimidated with all this information if you're brand new and just going after a basic community-wide assessment grant. Thanks again, and we're going to move on to the big section called ranking, and that's where you get the points, which really helps you get the cut to get the grant.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, everyone. This is Nicole Comic-Bates.
Yes, yeah, if you push the button, my phone might down.
Please remember to hit star 6.
Okay.
Thank you. And again, this is Nicole Comic-Bates, and I work with grantees in the states of Mississippi, North Carolina, and South Carolina. And we're going to begin on slide number 51. I'm sorry, on slide number 50. Pay close attention to the following discussion, because your responses in the remaining sections will determine whether or not your proposals will be considered for funding. Here we're going to cover the ranking criteria for the assessment, the cleanup, and the revolving loan fund grant. At slide 50, the key to obtaining a Brownfield grant is ensuring that your proposal receives the highest score possible. In a moment, we will discuss each ranking criterion in more detail. However, it is most important to note the total score that you may achieve for each grant type. If you plan to create an assessment grant proposal, you will address 10 criteria that will total 132 points. For cleanup grant proposals, you will answer 9 criteria that will total 127 points. And if you plan to submit a revolving loan fund proposal, you will address 10 criteria, and you may potentially receive a final possible score of 150 points. So answer each question as thoroughly as possible, and you have, again, 18 pages to clearly illustrate your community's environmental story. So use that space to do so. And again, your Region 4 project officers may know your communities. However, the reviewers who will score your proposals will not. So paint a clear picture for them with the words that you plan to type on those pages. To help you gauge how much time and how many pages you might want to devote to each section, one of our regional project officers has developed a tool that is listed on the cluein.org site. For each of the 3 proposal types we are discussing today, and those are entitled the Assessment, Revolving Loan Fund, or Cleanup Grant Section Length Tools. These are optional. However, if you do use one, please let us know if it helps you.
Yeah, this is Brian. I want to do a commercial marketing for that tool. It's a great little program tool. Please go to the that website. It's as simple as just putting in your total pages, and we really encourage 18 pages, like Nicole said. Put in the length of your cover and threshold criteria, and it'll spit out how many pages you theoretically should dedicate to some of these sections, particularly reducing threats, which we'll get into. It's a great tool, and we're very proud of it. So be sure to visit that.
Now, do your homework before you begin. So review the epa.gov/brownfields website and look at the grants that have been awarded in the past. Request a copy of a successful proposal if you think that would help you. But above all else, we encourage you to complete your proposals as soon as possible. Once you do so, ask one of your partners or your peers to review it for you. We're going to move on to slide number 51. Useful hints. Keep in mind that our reviewers are looking for what is unique about your community. So ensure that your responses are specific to your targeted area. Show us how your brownfields projects fit into the overall development goals or a master plan for your surrounding area. And if a master plan is in fact in place, then say so. State your project objectives and goals, and while doing so, ask yourself, what does my community want to see when we walk out of our homes and businesses each morning and evening? What types of jobs are available here? Where are our children playing after school? Your proposals can allude to those answers, and you may link your goals to your responses. Again, this brownfields grant may only represent a small portion of a larger plan for your community. If you have a final goal in mind, and you already have started working toward that, then let us know what you've accomplished thus far. If your goals include addressing both hazardous substances and petroleum-contaminated sites, then plan to submit a separate hazardous substance proposal and a separate petroleum proposal. Then give us specific references to hazardous sites in the hazardous proposal and separate references to petroleum sites in the petroleum proposal. Let's proceed to slide 52. If you have not already done so, begin working on your proposals now. Hastily prepared proposals tend to leave out crucial information. Start identifying and, if possible, organizing your brownfields team that will help you implement this grant. They could assist you in addressing some of those ranking criteria that we're asking. They can also help you avoid identifying overly ambitious project objectives. Know your limitations on the brownfields funds before you begin identifying your tasks. The appendices in the back of the proposal guidelines that are listed on the cluein.org site detail the eligible uses for brownfields funding. So if you have questions about whether or not you can perform certain activities, then refer to the appendix or one of your Region 4 project officers. Our criteria asks multiple questions within each section, so please thoroughly read each criterion and ensure you answer each subsection within each of those. Although we mentioned earlier that you should fill the white space on your pages, lengthy explanations that do not address the criteria only irritate the reviewers. So fill those spaces with substantive responses. One error that we see time and time again is the lack of planned or secured leverage funding or other resources. So go back with me to bullet number 2 on this same slide. And here we mention that applicants often list overly ambitious project objectives, and our brownfield grants are limited to certain amounts. Our funding will not achieve all that you wish to accomplish, so we would like you to illustrate how you plan to supplement our grant to reach your final goal. We will discuss this in more detail later. Let's move on to slide 53. Here we're going to talk about our basic level of funding, and that's the assessment grant. Our next slide is 54. With the assessment grant, you may inventory potential brownfields properties. You may characterize and assess the extent of the contamination on those properties through Phase 1 and Phase 2 environmental site assessments. You can conduct site-specific planning, and you may also conduct community involvement and outreach activities related to specific brownfield sites. Most of the proposals we receive are community-wide or will assess more than one site. Community-wide proposals give you the flexibility to choose and possibly substitute sites within your targeted area throughout your project period, and your Region 4 project officer will be able to assist you with that effort. Typically, we grant $200,000 to an applicant. However, if a particular site is larger than average brownfields properties or if other extenuating circumstances exist, then you may be eligible to apply for a site-specific waiver of that $200,000 funding limit. In those cases, you may receive a total of $350,000 for a specific site. And again, that's for a site-specific proposal only. Slide 55. Here we list the 10 ranking criteria for the assessment grant, and those include the budget, community needs, site selection process, sustainable reuse of brownfields, the creation and or the preservation of green space or open space, pre-award community notification, ongoing community involvement, reduction of threats to human health and the environment, leveraging of additional resources, and programmatic capability. 9 of the criteria here are also the same criteria requested for the cleanup and the revolving loan fund grant. Only the 3rd criterion, site selection process, is unique to the assessment grant. The numbers listed next to each represent the total possible ranking your proposal may receive for each criterion. Please pay particular attention to the highest ranking sections, and these are community need, ongoing community involvement, reduction of threats, and programmatic capability. Those 4 sections combined will provide more than half of the total score possible for your entire proposal. Our next section will begin on page 56, and that's our budget. Here again, we have a total possible score of 10 points, and we're going to give you a few useful tips about the budget itself. Let's move on to page 57. Please make sure you include a short narrative with your budget explaining each of your individual tasks. Please don't use acronyms, and never ever use the word administrative costs. Administrative costs are not allowed with our program. You may only use programmatic expenses here. And that is any expenses that will be used on, well, any activities that you will conduct under the actual Brownfields grant. That will include conducting any of those outreach activities, filing our paperwork, or any activities along those lines. Describe your travel here for us. We also have summer workshops for our new grantees, as well as a national workshop that we host every other year. So we'd like you to include those expenses in your budget as well. We also encourage you to include $5,000 or less in your supply category only. Anything over that amount will be listed as an equipment expense. Slide 58. Under the assessment grant, you can actually use your funds to conduct cleanup planning for a specific site. So, if you conduct a phase one assessment, you then conduct a phase two assessment, and you in fact find that there are contaminants that must be cleaned up, you can conduct what we call an analysis of Brownfields cleanup alternatives, or ABCA for short. And we can actually pay for that under this particular grant.
That's a feasibility study that she's referring to. And the feasibility study allows you to plan the type of cleanup activity and estimate what type of cost. Feasibility study, again, allows you to look at the types of remedies that should be proposed for the type of cleanup that you're looking for. And again, certainly it allows you to put in place or at least to answer for your budget what type of cost you're looking at.
Thank you, Olga. In addition to that, you can also use 10% of your budget to monitor your community's health. If you choose to do so, please make sure that you also include that same activity in the reduction of threats to human health and environment section as well. You can use 10% of your budget to monitor and enforce any institutional controls, as well as to conduct any other program development and implementation activities. Our next slide, 59. Here we strongly encourage you to at least take a broad look at your community, determine the type of contaminants that may be there, and just estimate the number of assessments that you think you may conduct. We understand that this number will not be firm, but at least make an educated guess about it. If you have in-kind services that your local government or any other entity will provide for you, please ensure that these are included in your budget as well. Now, you will not list this as a federal expense. It will be listed as a non-federal expense on your budget sheet. Our next slide is slide 60, Community Need. Community Need has a total of 15 points that are possible, and here we would like you again to start painting the picture about your particular community. Describe to us exactly what's going on there. You can even tell us the economic condition that was there previously before your industries may have shut down, the number of jobs that you've lost, the demographics that are there at this point, the level of poverty and unemployment, and ensure that you include the source of that information. Let's move on to slide 61, Useful Tips. Make sure you include, we're going to go down to the third bullet, your meaningful statistics, which are available for comparable areas, especially if the targeted area stats have increased the challenges of your particular community. Slide 62.
Before we move on, we'd like to please encourage you, if you do not have mute on your phone, please, 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 because you're distracting other people, please press star 6 so that you may mute your phone and we won't and carry on what type of activity you need to carry on. Thank you.
Slide 62. And again, even if it's anecdotal, please make sure you let us know what is going on in your community. How have those closed businesses and factories impacted your property taxes? How many jobs have actually been lost? And if you plan on submitting a community-wide proposal, please be clear about your targeted area. It's oftentimes easier to explain a specific site and what's going on there, but there are also several sites that might be in a particular area that might impact the larger neighborhood as well. And in those instances with the community-wide proposals, we want yours to be just as strong as the site-specific in this particular section. Slide 63. This is one of our sub-criterion that I mentioned earlier. Please make sure you answer this one just as thoroughly as you do number 1, which is B2, of community need. We're explaining how the targeted community will benefit from this grant. Will jobs increase as a result? Will more green space be allocated as a result of that? Please just be as clear as you possibly can. Slide 64. Useful tips for community need. For bullet number 2, consider giving one tangible example where a recent brownfields redevelopment has increased your tax base, where jobs have been hired and it's actually reduced the crime in your area. Slide 65. This is the third section of community need. And here we'd like you to characterize the impact of the brownfields on your community by describing the extent of those, meaning how many brownfields are in your area, how many local gas stations have been closed down, how many abandoned buildings are on your block. How has the actual economics of those buildings or businesses closing down affected your particular community? How has the environment been impacted by that? Was there contamination from that building? Slide 63, useful tips for community need. I'm sorry, 66. Share the number, size, and location of your sites once again, and if you don't know, then conduct an anecdotal estimate or call your state brownfields coordinators. And again, those lists have been provided in the Quillen.org website about any form of manufacturing sites or underground storage tanks from your town or area. Share a unique community feature. Are there Everglades in your area? Are there recreational facilities that might benefit from this grant? And describe any specific negative impacts that potentially contaminated properties have had in your neighborhood. Also mention not just the environmental impacts, but also the economic and health impacts as well. Let's move on to slide 67, site selection process. Again, this is one criteria that is specific to the assessment grants only. So please make sure you describe, even if it is community-wide, how you will select the sites that you may not have chosen yet. Will there be an actual process that you'll put in place? Will there be a community that will vote on these sites? Describe any past or planned inventory activities that have already been conducted by your community. And if you are going to assess privately owned sites, then please ensure that you discuss with us how you are going to access those particular sites. And if there are access issues, how you will resolve them. Slide 68. A few useful tips about site selection. For subcriterion C1, please remember that your reviewers are looking for the community's input into this site selection process. So you may plan to conduct a brownfield task force. It would be useful for us to know if a community member is a part of that team. Identify the specific site selection criteria that your community will be using. Mention why this targeted corridor or area was selected. Did the community help you decide on that? Was this an area that was identified in your master plan? Even if no inventorying has already been conducted, then get a count from your regulatory agency, your state agency, of the existing brownfields in your area. Let's move on to slide 69. For subcriterion C3, most proposal writers do not understand or respond to access issues, and therefore you'll lose points as a result of that. So if you have a pre-existing access agreement that you've already drawn up, then let us know that. Slide 70. Here we're going to pass the torch back over to Olga Perry, and she's going to discuss with you sustainable reuse of brownfields property.
Actually, we're going to take a break at this time. It's 11 a.m. I know everybody's ready and eager to go, so we're going to take a five-minute break. I know we said 10, but we're going to give you 5 minutes to run and get that cup of coffee, get a drink of water, whatever the case may be. You have 5 minutes. We will resume at 11:06. Thank you.
Hi there, we're taking a 5 minute water break and we'll resume at 11:06.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
because we leave three nights. We'll be there three nights. We'll be there three nights.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Clue-In session, to the September 13th Clue-In session for, what's the name of our Clue-In session? Brownfield's Online Grant Workshop, Understanding the Proposal Guidelines. We're going to start with Ranking Section D, Sustainable Reuse of Brownfields, and that should be slide number 70.
70.
That's correct. Thank you. Please don't forget, everyone, please don't forget, even though we're just coming from a break, don't forget to put your phone on mute, and you can do that by pressing star 6. And when we finish the presentation, you may unmute it by doing pound 6. Again, we greatly appreciate your participation and any questions you may have. Again, ranking Section D, sustainable reuse of brownfield. This section is worth 12 points. In this section, we ask you to explain to what extent will this grant support your goal. Please tell us what type of strategy you are going to use or what type of strategy you will include in your development or sustainable reuse of this particular brownfield. How will receiving this grant promote economic benefits for your area? That's slide 70. We're going on to slide 71 under number 3. Please explain in section D under number 3 how receiving this particular grant will promote a viable, equitable, and healthy community. Again, this area or this section is worth 12 points. It's a very, very, very important section for you. Again, if getting this point, getting these points, the highest you can get in this point, is going to help your point, help your average to be more than half. Please tell us again how the master plan is going to be used, how your brownfield area, I should say, how your particular brownfield site or area is going to be incorporated into your city, state, county's master plan, into your revitalization efforts. Respond to each of the focus areas. Failure to address each will result and a loss of scoring points. On to section E, slide 72, creation and or preservation of green space. This section is worth 5 points. It's an important section because you need every point you can get. Trust me when I say that. Sometimes the decisions are so narrow, you need every point you can get. But with that said, please explain this information, but utilize the majority of your time in those heavy point-getting sections. With creation and or preservation, remember to the extent to which the grant will facilitate the creation of, preservation of, or addition to a park, greenway, undeveloped property, and so forth. If the grant will result in the preservation of green space, let us know that. Please take the time to put that information in. On to slide number 75. This is a useful tip for you. The operative word for this particular section is or. Green space and or nonprofit purpose. In the community-wide application...
174, everyone.
I'm sorry, slide number 74. In community-wide applications, this criteria may be a factor in your site selection process. You may want, but please make that statement, make that case. Let's go on to slide, up to the next slide, 75. Again, this is in section E, under creation and or preservation of green space. Another useful tip, be specific about any planning documents or regulations. As Nicole stated earlier, please make sure you do your homework. The more specific information you are able to provide for us, the better your score will result, the better the results will be for your score. Again, consult with your parks department on long-term care and management. The more information you provide, the better your score will be. Next slide, number 76. This is section F, pre-award community notification. This section is worth 12 points. And in this section, we are asking that you describe how you will notice the targeted community, how involvement of the community or what the involvement of the community will mean to you and to the site. What kind of handouts you're going to provide, if any handouts, we need to know that type of information. Will you provide any of that information in a language other than English? Does the community require you to publish your information in something other than English? And as you see in slide number 77, that's one of our useful tips. Actual notification, well, maybe not in that slide, it's in our next slide, but anyway, actual notification, we need to know if you've already done some community notification, include that information in your proposal. We consider notification to citizens or members of the public, not exclusively to the government officials. So that means if the only thing you have done is to notify your council members, that's good, and that's something that you can put into your pre-award information. But we also want to know that you're going to contact people outside. And you can provide us that information through any notifications that you've passed to the public, to by any attached meeting notifications. Maybe you've had a charrette or something in your community. You can put that as an attachment in your proposal, any minutes from that and any attendance to that meeting.
Hi, this is Brian. I just got back from some workshops in Florida, and it was a lot of questions, what is pre-award? So just to clarify, this section F, pre-award is really today through the time that you actually get the funding, which we anticipate you may get the funding in next July. So any activities that you do to help notify the community of both this proposal that you're working on or the subsequent work plan, when we say, hey, congratulations, now it's time to give us a work plan, from today or maybe some months before now, all the way to July when we give the money right in your hands, that's the pre-award time span. So I just want to make that clear because there's a lot of questions on that. Thank you, Olga.
No problem. Also, let me mention for pre-award community notification, if there's a neighborhood association in the area where your brownfield is going to be located, please mention that. Please make sure that you contact that community and let them know what it is you plan to do and that you are applying. If it's not a neighborhood association or it's not any individuals around that you plan on noticing, let us know that as well. It is not okay to simply say, this does not apply. You will not get the maximum amount of points for saying, it simply does not apply. Again, if your community requires you to publish your information in something other than English, please state that. If the demographics, I should say, please state that. Ongoing community involvement. That's our next slide, which is 79. This section is worth 16 points. Please, and this is very, very, very important, what are your plans for the community? What do you have that the community can be involved in? Will the efforts provided by the community be recognized by the grant recipient? We need to know this information. And again, this is Section G, Ongoing Community Notification. Let's go on to slide 80. We need to know, or at least in this section, please describe your specific plans for communicating the progress of your project to citizens. How do you plan on letting them know that the gentlemen that you see out there sampling in the little white uniforms or whatever the case may be, the big drill trucks that you see out there, what the people are going to be doing? Because you'll find quite often if you don't notify them, people will begin to get they'll be curious, I should say, and they'll add their own little information in there. Perhaps there was an alien buried out there. They don't know. So you have to let them know what's going on at that particular moment and what your plans are and how they can participate. Again, a useful tip, when you're, as we require that you list your community-based organizations, anyone involved in the project, and so forth. When you make that list, please make sure that you contact the individuals, and I'm on to slide 81. I should make that statement. Please make sure that you contact those people, because we will contact them, and you don't want us to contact them cold. If we contact them and we say, have you heard anything about the proposal that Group X has submitted? If their response is no, then all the information that you've submitted under your community notification is suspect. So please make sure that you contact anyone that you place on that list. Contact them before you submit the proposal. Start now. As Nicole and others have stated in their presentation, you need to make sure that you do all your homework up front. And one last slide on ongoing community notification. That's slide 82. Remember, community progress, the community process, you can present that to the public through fact sheets, through meetings, through newspapers, through websites, local access to television and radio channels. You can do it through that way. Make it as friendly as possible for the community. Design and implement your strategy starting now. Again, thank you for participating, and I'm going to pass it on to Brian to do ranking section H. Brian?
Hi. Thank you very much, Nicole.
I'm Olga.
Olga, pardon me.
That's okay.
For those explicit details, we're going to be moving on to the biggest score section that we offer in this grant, and when we debrief the unsuccessful applicants, this always seems to be an area where we could have great improvement. So please pay close attention. I'm not going to read
all the synopsis of the guidelines. The guidelines are there and stand on its own. But the first H1, how are you going to spend funds basically to identify and reduce threats? And tell us something about the proposed end use. And the H2 is basically how are you working with these other partners, such as local health agencies, as well as your state environmental program. So the tips we have to share for you, because 26 points is the biggest section here. Community-wide, reiterate that these phase ones and phase twos are going to be used for the higher goal of reducing health risks. Please mention any contaminations of concern to your community. If you've got samples of certain industries that have been closed down, and you've got definitely an industry sector that you know it is, some industry sectors and you don't are typical of certain chemicals, go ahead and do that research, solvents, etc. If you don't haven't already done a phase one and or phase two, give us at least some information to go by as far as what these chemicals on site. If they're in the area of perhaps lead contaminants, talk about if they're a neurotoxic or some of the health effects. If you can do that extra level of effort, that will definitely pay off in this section. I'm waiting for the next slide, which is slide 87. Okay. You've gone one extra. I'm on 86. If it is for petroleum funding, remember, the two different proposals have to be distinct. Just keep on talking about petroleum. Don't do a simple cut and paste from your hazardous substance. Please be distinct about petroleum. Pull out of any phase two work with the specific chemicals and their effects if you can. If you've talked about in B3 health risk as a community, do the same refrain here, tie it together. If there are local health assessment reports from agencies, it's okay to cite it. That makes it stronger. Try to bring it back to the targeted community. We don't want stock answers in here. We got to bring it back to the target community that you're affecting. For H2, we really want you to talk about the important role that the state program will play in looking at your phase two reports. And even if you're talking about assessment grant, talk about your subsequent cleanup. They will be involved, and we'd like to hear about how they will be involved with you in subsequent cleanup activities and how you may be encouraging property owners to participate in that program when the time comes. And if you've chosen and elected to do the 10% health monitoring or institutional engineering control monitoring, be sure to reference it in H2, please. That's very instrumental. Name the health department by name, and that'll help you out. And lastly, I tell my grantees in Florida, talk about that low groundwater table. Talk about being upgrading of the Everglades. If you're a special ecosystem area, wherever you're applying, please talk about that. The evaluators of Region 4 don't know about that. They don't know if some of the brownfields runoff may feed into important tributaries or recreational areas. Talk about that. And also talk about how subsequent cleanup activities will meet state and federal standards. I'm going to move on to I. The leveraging is all about telling us about your funding that you're going to target to meet the assessment needs. And we are on page 89. And secondly, how you may be willing to fill in those funding gaps. As far as 90 goes, we want you to talk about an overall gap, if it exists, and how you're going to make up that gap. If you've got the grand plans for doing $1 million worth of assessment, and you're only asking for $400, how are you going to make up that gap? Talk about FTEs. If you project that you're going to leverage your internal staff to do programmatic costs, write us quarterlies and so forth, maybe it's 0.1 FTE a year, full-time equivalent. And please tell us funds that you will be or may consider pursuing. The next slide of 91 talks about the exception. You can go after definitely foundation money, definitely private sector money, state grants, HUD grants, and that may definitely leverage your efforts to get more assessments done. In the case of the other subsequent grants, more cleanups done. So programmatic capability is something that if you're from our Region 4 states, we'll be looking at. And all that is very self-explanatory, 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm going to move on to the tips. Identify key staff who are going to do the brownfield grant management work. You may want to just add up their years' experience. Brag about if you've got a fine-tuned finance and procurement office that it exists, that they have they're very seasoned at managing and paying for grants. If you've got staff with previous experience working with environmental consultants, that's critical. And absolutely don't avoid the adverse findings. Mention it if you have had any, if you haven't. That's on 93. And as far as federal grants, please brag if you've got other federal grants. Total it up, but also mention the grant by what agency. You can use our alphabet soup, but then total them out. We want you to show that you have managed grants and you have a success at it. So moving on to 94, if you are a previous grant holder, please brag about what you've done with our money. How well you've been giving us quarterly reports and also leveraging information. With that, I'm going to, what are we, 95, 96. Yeah, if you are a previous grantee, go ahead and be truthful about all the great things you've done. And everybody has to answer J4. We typically look at these measures. You can add in other measures. If you want to track how your real estate values have increased around the brownfield sites or how the health stats have improved after the brownfield assessments or subsequent cleanup activities have occurred, you can talk about that. But these are some basic ones you can refer to. So I'm going to hand it off to Wanda, who's going to talk about cleanup and revolving loan funds.
Hello, everyone. My name is Wanda Jennings, and I'm the contact person here in Region 4 for mostly the revolving loan fund grants. The main purpose of my session is to cover both the cleanup and the revolving loan fund ranking elements. And I'm starting on page, or should I say slide, 97 of the presentation. As it was mentioned early on, we fared extremely well in our last competitional cycle. Out of 100 proposals received, our region was awarded 31 assessment grants, 11 cleanups, and one revolving loan fund grant. Next slide. To briefly recap the cleanup grants, cleanup grants are used to fund individual properties up to $200,000 over a period of 3 years. Due to budget limitations, an entity cannot apply for more than 3 sites. Nonprofits may apply, and there's also a 20% cost share. Now, in order to receive a cleanup grant, the applicant must have sole ownership of the property by June 30th of 2008. And also, as it was mentioned, a Phase 1 report must be complete, as well as a Phase 2 site assessment report must either be complete are underway prior to proposal submittal. Slide 99, now to recap the revolving loan fund grants. Revolving loan fund grants are funded up to $1 million per entity or coalition member over a period of 5 years. And as you can see from our slide, recipients may use at least 60% of the money for loans, and up to 40% of our funds can be used for cleanup sub-grants. Just like cleanup grants, there's a 20% match share requirement. Now, the revolving loan fund grants are essentially a three-tier process. Our funds actually flow from EPA onto the grant recipient and then onto the loan of the sub-grantee. 100? Okay, this next slide shows all the ranking elements included in the revolving loan fund and the cleanup grant proposal. I'm only going to cover the elements that are different from the assessment grant proposal type. Okay, with that, I'll talk about the budget, reduction of threats, leveraging, programmatic capability, and the business plan for the revolving loan fund proposals, and which I'll cover last. All right, everybody, heads up. The ranking elements for revolving loan fund proposal starts on page 35 of the guidelines for cleanup. And this is on page 51. I'm sorry, that's page 51. Okay, I think I've gotten a little turned around. Let me back up to make sure that you understand what I'm trying to say here. The ranking elements for the revolving loan fund proposal starts on page 35 of the guidelines, and this is on page 51 for cleanup. There are 10 ranking elements for the revolving loan fund. They go from A through J, and 9 for cleanup, which is A through I. Slide 101. This slide here shows a comparison of the two proposal grant types by numerical values. The highest total possible points for a revolving loan fund grant is 150 points. And for the cleanup grant, this is 127 points. Again, I am only covering both budgets, which is ranking element A, and elements G, H, and I for cleanup. And if you will notice, these are the same elements as H, I, and J for the revolving loan fund proposals. I plan also to cover just element C, which is the business plan, which is only unique to the revolving loan fund program. Now, let's look at ranking element A, slide 102. Okay, this element is worth 10 points, and typical cleanup tasks might include things such as site cleanup, your site cleanup, community involvement, and your cleanup planning. Again, notation here. For your cleanup grants, the budget must reflect the 20% cost share. Slide 103. This next slide shows a sample budget format for revolving loan fund grants. Like the cleanup and the assessment, this budget is also worth 10 points. Typical revolving loan fund tasks might include community involvement, establishing the revolving loan fund, marketing the loan fund, operating the loan fund, your cleanup planning, and as well as overseeing your cleanup. Again, notation. Just like your cleanup grant proposal, the revolving loan fund budget must also reflect your 20% cost share. And if you are applying for both hazardous waste and petroleum revolving loan fund funding, 4 budget tables must be submitted. Slide 104, which is used for tips, for both proposal types, are the same as for the assessment. So with the exception to the next slide, 105. So actually, let's turn to 105. For revolving loan fund grant proposals, if the applicant plans to make loans in sub-grants, then they must submit 2 separate budgets showing your loan pool budget task and as well as your sub-grant pool budget task. Don't put all your programmatic costs under the loan budget. Show your programmatic expenditures also under the sub-grant budget as well. And I cannot emphasize this more. Please double-check your math. Make sure your rows and your columns add up to the amount requested, plus the match, especially with multiple budget tables. Slide 106. For ranking elements B through F, this is cleanup proposal, and C through G, revolving loan fund proposal. Please refer back to the assessment rankings. These elements listed here are unique to all three grant types, and they have already been discussed. Okay, now this brings us to ranking element G, slide 107, which is reduction of threats. Okay, this is element G for cleanup proposal and H for revolving loan fund. The element is worth 27 points for cleanup and 26 points for the revolving loan fund. Sub-element 3 is unique only to cleanup grants. Okay, here in sub-element 3, we want you to describe your proposed cleanup plan and your estimated cost to complete the cleanup. What are your known contaminants of concern? What are your known or perceived risks and the costs associated with what is known? This is what we are looking for you to respond to. Slide 108. Leveraging of additional resources is ranking element H for cleanup and I for revolving loan fund, and both are worth 10 points. There are two sub-elements under this criteria. Sub-element 1 is unique to a revolving loan fund proposal. It really takes a commitment at every level to make the revolving loan fund program work. You truly have to be dedicated and willing to succeed, and a big part of this is obtaining additional funds to complete most of all of your cleanup projects. Slide 109, programmatic capability. This element is worth 20 points for both proposal types. This is ranking element I for cleanup and J for revolving loan fund. With respect to the cleanup proposals, sub-elements 1 through 4 are the same as for assessment. With the revolving loan fund proposal, this element is called the programmatic capabilities / management structure. The second sentence in sub-element J1 is unique to the revolving loan fund proposal only. Here, if you plan to hire a fund manager or an environmental expert, please describe this relationship in the type of agreement plan. Slide 110, ranking element C, which is the business plan. This is the last element I'll talk about, and it pertains only to the revolving loan fund proposal. This element is what can make or break you securing a revolving loan fund grant. And as you can see, it is worth 24 points with 4 sub-elements. Okay, here in sub-elements C1 and 2, we are looking for you to tell us about your loan and your sub-grant products that you plan to offer. Describe your market. Are you marketing your program for developers, small businesses, locals, etc.? And also tell us, if known, the type of sites that you plan to address. Are you looking to address abandoned gas stations, industrial sites, commercial sites, and the list goes on. Slide 111. For sub-element C3, describe your plan for sub-grants. If you plan to sub-grant, will this agreement be tied to a loan? For sub-element C4, tell us your management and your operational teams that will oversee and implement this revolving loan fund grant. At least, and let me repeat this, at least 50% of a single staff person's time is mandatory for the first 2 years of the revolving loan fund grant management. Useful tips. Slide 112. Know what you're getting into first before you apply for the grant, and that's any grant, whether it's via the assessment, cleanup, or revolving loan fund. Talk to successful grantees in our region and as well as outside of our region. In regards to the revolving loan fund program, I have come to find out that the key to making this program work is marketing the revolving loan fund program. And let me say, lastly, please put some thought into your responses. Don't just regurgitate what is in our guidelines. Really think about what you're writing. If you think that all of this is about writing competitively, well then guess what? It is, because a competitive written proposal is usually a winning proposal. This concludes my part. The next slide I've already talked about. So now I'm going to turn it back over to Brian, wrap up, and Q&A.
Okay, this is Brian. I've got a few comments, but before we move on Q&A, I'm going to let Alice take us home here.
Hey, guys. My name is Alice Carter, and good morning. I only have about 4 slides to discuss, and then we'll be wrapping up. And we appreciate your time. So let's, on slide 115, this is the key steps for applicants. And at this point, everyone of you should begin incorporating your changes and your edits into your new draft proposal. And hopefully from today's session, you guys will have some changes and some edits to incorporate. Another important thought is begin thinking about your site for your selection, whether it be a community-wide assessment or a site cleanup or even a revolving loan. There are sites out there that you're thinking about, and even sites you don't even probably know about that probably need to be assessed. So it's important to think about that, too. Also, if you have any eligibility questions, please contact the Region 4 Brownsville staff. We are certainly here to help you guys and give you some information. When preparing and reviewing your proposals, contact your associated partners that are in your venture for assistance. And two very helpful hints is to get a sample of a winning proposal for your review to be used as an example. And another helpful hint is to get a peer review. And these two sound sort of corny, but they're very good because you're competing for points, and we want to get you the most points that you can get. So it does help. It really does. Also, if you're applying for a petroleum grant, contact the appropriate state that you're in for that petroleum grant. And as an option, decide, it's strongly recommended to put the notice in the local newspaper for this app when you're applying for these grants. Also, set up a meeting, a public meeting at in a community center or a library in your target community. And lastly, on this slide, get your state acknowledgement letter from your state and close in your package. Now, slide on 116 is called Resources. We have a regional, which is R4 in Atlanta, and headquarters information that are online, and the web addresses are shown, both online information. Today's clue-in is available with the appropriate web address as shown.
And also audio, if you know some friends who missed this session, you can direct them to listen to our audio and download the presentation.
That was Brian. And this is Alice again. Earlier they were talking about the National Brownfield Conference that's sponsored every 2 years. The one for FY08 or for your 08 will be in Detroit, Michigan, May the 5th to the 8th on 2008. So that's a very good resource to go to and find out lots of very critical information. Okay, slide 117. These are this is just additional information, and these are basically POCs for the different areas you might need for any of the competition issues.
It's kind of self-explanatory.
POC is personal contact, and this is for FYOA, the competition issue. You might want to see or call Olga Perry and her phone number and her email address. For FY threshold issues, we have Wanda Jennings and her phone number and her email address. We also have Rudy, with his phone number and email address. Any assessment problems or questions, talk to Nicole Bates at her phone number and email address. Cleanup issues should be addressed to Mike Norman or Olga Perry at their phone numbers and addresses. And also for any RLF, which is Revolving Loan Fund issues, Wanda Jennings, and there's her phone number and web address. And 5118, this is to say thank you from everyone at R4. And please, because we really do want your feedback. It's very important to us because we're just trying to help. Here is our feedback web address. And I'll turn it back over to Brian and others for answers to the questions. But thanks very much.
Thanks, Alice. We do want to acknowledge all those people on board who've taken this time so far to be patient. I do want to mention the special role consultants play. There's many on the call I saw on the registration list. They play an important role during your grant as well as before your grant. All that we ask you, some of them are very good at writing grants that when it does come time to open bidding on your grant, that's open and fair competition to all consultants. And do want to acknowledge the contractor SRA as well as the Kuhn office for helping put this together. For the new grantees, just realize you got at least a portion, 40 to 60 or plus hours to get this grant written. So you still have time. It's not too late. For those who may have failed last year, you may need to at least, depending on how much you missed the cut, you may have to at least 20 hours. But one thing we forgot to mention, the guidelines are the same as last year. So that's great news for those who missed out last year. Just go ahead and tighten up what you've got. Our team is going to work best at answering your questions. We're going to address the ones that are sent in to us electronically. Then we're not going to be biased. We're going to open it up to all the people who've graciously been on the telephone and get to them as best as possible. Within the last 15 minutes here. So without further ado, we're going to go around the table. And Nicole's going to help coordinate answering these questions. And we're going to read the question for those who may just be not have access to these.
Our first question, is this grant program open to nonprofits such as watershed associations?
So response to question number one, nonprofit organizations such as watersheds can apply for either our cleanup or the Revolving Loan Fund grants.
Regarding a fee simple title, if a watershed does not own the land, can they enter into an agreement with the owner to be the agent for that owner to make the application for funding?
The answer is yes.
Yes, they can. Because you just have to be able to show the simple title to obtain a cleanup grant.
Property ownership isn't required for assessment grants.
Mm-hmm.
Next question, third one.
How can we obtain a list of the participants in this section? We will actually make that available to you all via email within the next 2 days with all of the answers to the questions that we are reading to you now. Next question. In the grant proposal, is it a good idea to confer with the local historical society to include the site background into the proposal? Yes, it is a good idea to confer with your local historical society. It's not a requirement at the time that you submit the proposal, but your terms and conditions, once the grant is awarded, requires you to do this. A comment was sent in. Please note that the registration on grants.gov may take more than 2 to 3 days. You must have a DUNS number, D-U-N-S, to start. If not, you must add additional time to obtain one. So please begin registration now to avoid any problems. And we thank Elena Rush from Spartanburg, South Carolina for giving us that comment. And we will also be able to give you information on how to obtain a DUNS number if you are unfamiliar with doing so. So please just call any of the contacts at the end of the presentation if you have a question about that. Regarding maps and photos of the site, can we reference websites that have the mapping of that site to save proposal space?
Well, as far as maps and photos, if you want to attach a couple, please only use it as the attachment. If you've got a miniature one that comes out really clearly, you may want to insert it into the, you know, very valuable real estate pages of the 18 pages. But just referencing a website, I can tell you our evaluators who may spend 2 to 4 hours evaluating a grant, they're not going to be shopping around on the Yahoo or the internet to look at maps. So just I would include a couple as an attachment, and that would be it.
Our next question. What does the letter from the state cover, and what state agency issues it? For those of you that are completing assessment grants, refer to page 21, and it details in letter B exactly what we're requesting from that letter itself. And this is an acknowledgement letter. So it simply tells EPA that the state is aware that you are applying for funding for your particular area.
And specifically, it is your state's environmental agency. At the CLUIN website, we furnish the state agency contacts for our 8 southeastern states. Realizing we have about 30 people from 15 other states, just go to your regional website, simply epa.gov/region, and then put the number of your region that you're from, whether it be 1 or region 10 or whatever. And that should supply you with those kind of state agency, environmental agency contacts.
The next question. How much weight is given to environmental justice concerns in the proposal? And this relates to the community needs section. We're going to again start with the assessment section because this question doesn't change for either of the 3 grants. So we're going to find this on page 28 of the proposal guidelines. And section B, number 1, does request environmental justice related information.
And if you divide 15 by 3 subparts, that's 5 points. So we'd like you to talk about that issue while you're discussing or putting in a tabular format the census stats as far as race, poverty, other demographic issues.
Exactly. It's very important that you address each of the questions, question by question, line by line, to get the best score possible.
The next question, and this is regarding the 1-inch margin mentioned on slide 27. We were asked to locate the page number and the section in the guideline that documents where it indicates that proposals are limited to 1-inch margin. Our proposal does not actually refer to the 1-inch margin. Page 17.
The guidelines.
I'm sorry, our proposal guidelines don't specifically refer to that. But on page 17, number 2, it does require that you get the 8.5 by 11 inch paper with a 12-inch font, no more than 18 pages. As experienced reviewers, we are suggesting to you that the 1-inch margin be adhered to, but it's not a requirement.
It's a suggestion. I think it was absolute in previous guidelines, and it kind of got into our presentation here, but that's what we recommend. Evaluators' eyes get tired, so, you know, if you can't fit as much white space as possible, it'll make us read your grant much more effectively, your proposal.
Slide, the next question.
Slides 50, 51, and 52 of the helpful hints are somewhat different but clearer than the printout from the website. How can we get copies of these? Those revised slides should be loaded onto the website at this time. If not, we will ensure that that is done by the close of business today. Next question. If I include an attachment to demonstrate pre-award communication or community involvement, does that count against the 18 pages?
No. If you include it as an attachment, it does not count against your 18 pages, which is why we ask that you put it in attachment and all other things such as maps or any additional information. But whatever you put in that attachment, please make sure that it is clear and concise and that you have highlighted, slashed, underlined, or whatever the case is that you want to specifically review. Because as Brian has stated, these reviewers review quite a few proposals and their eyes get tired. So if their eyes are tired when they get to your proposal and they don't see everything or they don't read everything, then, you know, your score is not going to be the maximum you can get it. So you want to make everything convenient for a reviewer.
Next question.
We're delaying on these questions because our screen keeps on scrolling here, so bear with us.
Can you tell me the implications of having a hazardous-only assessment grant and discovering petroleum contamination during the assessment process? In other words, if you have funding for hazardous materials grants and during phase one or phase two process, you discover that there is petroleum contamination on site or in the area, how can you proceed with addressing those issues?
If you're going to submit in for a hazardous assessment funding and you're out in the field and you discover that you hit upon the petroleum site, we classify it as commingled site here in Region 4. So to address that issue, that is not a problem because we see it as commingled.
But if you forecast ahead of time, and I was just debriefing someone dealing with a railroad, if you can think ahead of time that they may have a switch yard, a maintenance facility, there's probably petroleum along those 14 miles, go ahead and put in a separate petroleum assessment grant. You can deal with that if it arises. In the event you don't end up needing our grant and return the money, that's fine, but go ahead and if you think there's a probability you're going to hit concentrated petroleum, go ahead and put in a separate petroleum assessment grant.
The next question, and please bear with us, we realize it's almost 12 o'clock. I am doing a site-specific assessment proposal for an old textile mill. My targeted community includes the owners of the 23 remaining original mill houses. Most of the demographic information from the Census Bureau is on a census tract basis only. Is it acceptable to personally gather demographic information on these residents through personal business and public meetings prior to application submission?
Well, the Census Bureau is fine, and there are Census Bureau people that can give you information. But if it's something within the census tract, yeah, you can do some anecdotal research on the sub-community, a target community, and that's okay. We're at a decision point. Gene, are you on? Or rather, Ashley, is this simulcast going to be cut off at 12?
I am not sure about that. Gene or someone would be better to answer that.
All right. In the event that it does and we get cut off, I want to ensure everybody's going to get an email of these Q&A. If you're on the telephone and we haven't got to your question, I'm very sorry. Please send us in your question. We will include it on the Q&A. You can send it to my email at holtzclaw, H-O-L-T-Z-C-L-A-W, Brian@epa.gov or Terry.Olga@epa.gov, and we will answer it adequately. But let's continue on with these written questions.
may I back up for just a moment? There was a question regarding fee simple title and whether a watershed association could join with the owner. Please know that you can do that, but the owner has to be an eligible applicant. I don't believe we said that we made that statement. Please make sure that the owner is an eligible entity that owns the site. That's the only way you can join with them, or you can take ownership of it. If they will get signed over the title to you, then you can apply.
And that deals strictly with cleanup grants, not assessments. That's only to your cleanup grant.
Exactly.
The next question. Our organization and environmental engineer consultant downloaded the guidelines in early August so that we could begin planning for a cleanup grant application. These guidelines state applicants must be sole owners by June 30th, 2007. Please verify that it is, in fact, June 30th, as this will change applicant site, et cetera. And those guidelines have changed, so if the consultant did download those before August 15th, that was a copy of the fiscal year 2007 guidelines. The fiscal year 2008 guidelines are currently online. So yes, in fact, the sole owner must be the owner of the site by June 30th, 2008.
And that's for cleanup grants.
For cleanup grants. Thank you, Brian. What language is required in the state acknowledgement letter? Is there a sample letter available online? We do not have a sample letter online, but again, it's a broad letter that your state agency will write for you, and there's no set text. Your agencies have completed several of these in the past. Simply contact them on that cluein.org site, and they will, again, just acknowledge that they are aware that you are applying for funding. Next question. Could you expound on the difference between targeted assessment and assessment grants, as mentioned on slide 59?
Targeted assessment grants are, they're grants, but what it is, we provide the service. If you get a, if you apply for a competitive grant, then we give you the money, you hire your contractor, or you hire the appropriate personnel to do the work that you need done. If you get a, if you apply for a an assessment, I mean a target, a TBA, that particular grant is a non-competitive grant, and it's, you would simply submit an application to EPA, and usually those sites are smaller sites than the ones that are competitive. And what we would do is we would have either the Corps of Engineers or have a contractor to go out and do a reconnaissance of the site, see what needs to be done, and then design what type of sampling activity needs to be done and or phase one that needs to be done. That's the difference between the two, assessment and targeted brownfield assessment.
Yeah, and just to add on or to expand what Olga is talking about, the assessment grants are competitive grants, whereas your targeted brownfield assessments are not competitive.
And we have an extremely limited fund pool here in Region 4 for those, so I wouldn't bankroll on getting your money that way. This is the time of year to go ahead and go after the grant. I would suggest going after it.
Also, you can apply for targeted brownfield assessments through your state. They also have funds available to do limited targeted brownfields.
Next question. The SBIR program supplies examples of successful grant applications. Can you do the same for the brownfield grants? Yes, in fact, we can do that, and as listed on slide 117, there are several project contacts. Please just call or email one of them, and we will gladly supply you with a copy of the successful brownfields proposal. Next question.
No, what we're really promoting in this presentation is we have a website of all the prior successful grantees. They're highlighted in yellow. Go to that website on one of our pages in our presentation. You need to pick up the phone, get cozy, and more than likely, they're going to be very flattered you're interested in seeing their successful grant proposal from last year, which, because the guidelines are the same, I would go after that, and use those as simply a go-by. They're a very good reference tool.
Thank you, Brian. Next question. Can you please clarify the types of contaminants that you would be eligible
that she would be eligible other than environmental contaminants?
Those contaminants are, let's see, hazardous substances and, oh wait, hold on one moment. We will list them in the written information regarding this presentation.
Next question. Can we apply if we'd like to open a community center for our children? Our areas are growing fast with housing and schools. However, there are no community centers for our children. The Brownfields grants are for environmental site assessments and cleanups. So again, we're just seed funding for many of your communities. So we will assess the soil as well as any contaminants that might be in groundwater. But for actual development of a community center, we suggest you try another federal agency for that resource. And we will provide a listing of those for you when we respond to the question.
But I will add this, Rhonda, is that the section, I think it's with the preserving green space and our public purpose, is the proposed end to use a community center. Yeah, these are great grants to get these sites cleaned up. So community centers or other useful nonprofit purposes are effectively put in place for these kind of community needs. So these grants can be a tool to achieve that proposed end use.
Next question. Is there a spacing requirement, double or single space, for the proposal? Yes, there is. Page 17 does list. I'm sorry, in the past there has been a spacing requirement. It doesn't look like we've listed it here. We do suggest that you single space to reserve room for those of you who have more to discuss in your proposals than others. Next question. Well, that is our final question. Is there anyone else online that would like to ask a question at this time?
We had about 60 people who just phoned in. They couldn't read these simulcast questions, so we really like, more than happy to ask questions. And more importantly, if you're a seasoned grant writer out there who's written grants for years, if you'd like to add any tips, we don't profess to know it all. Our expertise isn't evaluating grants. If you'd like to share anything that others could benefit from, please feel free to do that. So we're going to open it up.
We'll go, before we do that, this is Olga Perry. I want to go back to the question that was asked regarding what other type substances are eligible under this grant, contaminants that are eligible. If you will go to slide 8, I believe it is, on the eligible sites include the possible contaminants with hazardous substances, petroleum contamination, asbestos, as well as lead, controlled substances such as your meth lab. Also, you can utilize these funds for mine-scarred lands and, again, and other environmental contaminants. When the law was passed in 2002, it opened our definition for brownfields quite a bit. So, in fact, you can even sample for substances such as pigeon guano. So, it's open. If you have a specific contaminant in mind, give us a call, and we'll be more than happy to answer your question.
Also, Appendix 3 of the proposal guidelines does list the types of sites that are eligible for brownfields funding, and several of those contaminants are detailed there as well. Are there any additional questions? Well, we thank you for your patience and for participating in the fiscal year 2008 Grant Writing Online Workshop for Region 4. And again, please feel free to give us a call if you have any questions or concerns about your proposals. And good luck. Also, provide us with any feedback from the conference call today.
Thanks.